Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the Principal Advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to provide a market update with returns through the end of October. I also provide this monthly market update as a blog post that you can check out, including some graphs that I'll reference. For those regular readers, you'll notice that I have some new graphs this month using the new tool, so hopefully you enjoy them. Let me know what you think of them. The general format that I'm going to use is the same as always. I'm going to provide an update on the major asset classes and any noteworthy moves. I'm going to give you an update on the treasury market and the interest rate moves, plenty going on the long end right now. Quickly comment on the Federal Reserve action. They just had a meeting this Wednesday. I'm recording this on Friday, November the 3rd. And then finally, a couple of special topics this month, some year-end tax planning ideas, and I-bond rates and strategy. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial or investment advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So again, following the usual format, if you go to my blog post, you'll see I have a table at the top of the blog post. Shows returns for the month and year to date for the major asset classes that I follow, and then some volatility on the right hand side, how much it moves up and down. Standard deviation is the metric I use for volatility. So starting with the table first, similar to last month, once again, if you glance down the monthly returns, everything is negative. I guess two exceptions. One, cash continues to provide nice returns these days, and commodities eked out a small 0.3% gain for the month. But otherwise, everything else is negative again for the month of October. Looking at the column, who has the largest loss for the month, that award, if you want to call it that, that award goes to the small caps. So the U.S. small cap equities were down about 6.4% for the month. Concerns about potential pullback with higher rates are continuing to go up. They're going to have a bigger bite on small cap companies. And if we do go into recession, the concerns about small cap. So they were taking the brunt of it on the return basis. And then the second worst performer, which was the worst one last month, and that is the 30-year treasury rates. And so we'll talk about rates later on in the podcast here. But they continue to move higher. So as rates go up, bond prices go down. And so the 30-year index return was down 5.4% for the month alone, 14.5% down for those keeping track at home. And again, I mentioned commodities did have the small positive, so 0.2, 0.3, I guess, rounded here. I was surprised. Energy had a big pullback last month. Energy was the big largest returning sector, and within the commodity component, that was a big return. This past month, energy pulled back quite a bit, and but yet the commodity index, diversified commodity index, was able to hold out a positive return. Big driver, precious metals was driver there, so gold performed pretty well with all the global turmoil going on right now. And then if you turn your attention, those are the snapshot point in time, end of month returns and year to date. Then the next part of the blog post I show, again, using the ETFs for some major asset classes, is the total rate of return on a year-to-date basis. That way the reader can look at and see not only what the end of October year-to-date returns were, but you can see how things moved throughout the year. If you look at the graph, again, it's a new tool, so hopefully you guys like it. One difference, in the past, I would always have to show price return only, just given some limitations of the tool I was using. Now I'm able to show total return. So, especially as we get closer to the end of the year, just a quick summary of what the difference is for people. Price return, which is what most people are going to find if they look up on Google or Yahoo Finance, if that's still a thing these days. I don't use the public sites. But if you're looking up a stock price or an ETF price and return action on public websites, very high probability that is just price return. So it's ignoring any dividends if it's an ETF, any coupon or interest payments if it's a bond. So I'm now showing total return. So that incorporates any of that dividends or interest reinvested. So looking at the graph of total returns now, you'll see the July. The end of July was a relative peak in a lot of the risky asset classes, and then things have pulled back since then. So the graph, you'll see that that continues to be the case. October was another down month that I just talked about in the table. And returns are, or most of the returns are negative on a year-to-date basis. There are two of the major asset classes. Two of them still are sporting a positive year-to-date return, and those are the larger developed equity components. So specifically, the U.S. Large cap, as captured by the SPY, so the S&P 500, up about 10.6% rounded year-to-date through 10/31. And then the international developed markets, not emerging, but the developed markets are up about 3.8. Otherwise, we're looking at negatives for the rest. Just as a quick, the counterparts to those, so U.S. large being up 10.6, U.S. small caps, those are down, where is it? Down 4.6%. So quite a bit of a swing within the U.S. large and small. And then on the international side, again, developed up 3.8. And international emerging year-to-date down 2.4. So about a 5%, 6% swing on the international and about a 14 or 15% swing within the U.S. between large and small. And then other I show other things as well. Again, because we have total return now this month, so the aggregate bond, U.S. bond index, that's the nice magenta line, I guess, here today. Now with the coupons that you've been receiving, that return is down 2.6%. So since we're 10 months into the year, by holding the aggregate bond index, let's just assume you had a 6% yield, and so about 5% of that so far year to date, you got a positive 5% return from coupons and bond income. But then because interest rates rose, the price fell, and that took away, brought you down to that minus 2.5. So about a, roughly, very rough numbers, and it's approximating, but about a 7.5% price loss. Again, if you're looking up this stuff on public websites, you're going to see a big loss. But after you incorporate the carry you're getting, the bond income, it's a minus 2.6 loss for the year. So that is the major asset classes, the two ways I show it. The next section I will cover here, as always, is going to be the treasury rates. Obviously, the things you would invest in, I like things other than treasuries for a lot of the investment part of the portfolio, but I show treasury rates here just to capture underlying rate moves and what's going on. So looking at the graph, again, this similar, doesn't change much from what I always was showing, last five-year view. 3 month, 2 year, 10 year, 30 year treasury rates, the nominals as we know them, and then I do include the 10 year TIPS real yield, which I'll talk about a bit when I talk about I bonds later. So looking at the chart, you see that big rise in 2022 and the Fed was so active, but the thing that caught my attention again this month, same thing was happening last month. It actually kind of started at the end of July was when the long end of the curve took off. And when I say long end, I mean that like the 10-year and the 30-year maturity treasury rates. Over the last 2 months, like since end of July, they were up close to 1%. Pretty big. Actually, about even more. I might have just the month of. Don't quote me on that, but the last 2 months has been a big move for sure. 2 to 3 months, and so we're now looking at again at the end of the month. The 10-year 4.9% and the 30-year just over 5%. So the long end rates definitely rose quite a bit. The shorter end rates, let's just use the 2-year as our bogey here, that was pretty much flat. So again, that was always higher than the longer end. The curve was inverted, it was called. But as the 2-year kind of just hovers, it's not changing much, and the long end rates are now rising quite a bit, the curve is disinverting. That difference is getting much closer. So still negative. So the 2-year rate is still higher than the 10-year rate. The 2s-10s is a common metric they use. But it's now down maybe, call it 15 basis points, 0.15%. So definitely the curve on the long end moving quite a bit. Interesting value out there in my opinion, but it depends upon your view of what you think is going to happen with rates going forward. But a lot of pain has been inflicted on the long end. And then what's driving that? So I'll talk about the Federal Reserve in a second, but it's, in my opinion, it's not necessarily the long end going up a lot because of inflation concerns still out there, or the Fed's going to remain very active and keep raising rates. You know, a lot of that has been, or a portion of that has been priced in, I guess. You know, no one really knows for sure. But given these large moves, and especially since it started happening at the end of July, that is when the Treasury announced a much higher amount of issuance they had to do to kind of fill the hole, to fill the budget deficit. So there are concerns out there, have been for a while, but it's starting to get more attention where, you know, we are issuing a lot of debt as a country. We got to keep issuing debt as the deficit remains large. You know, the balance the budget, you and I have to do it on our own. And if you come up with a shortfall, you cut out something, or you try to, you know, money coming in has to equal money going out. Whereas the government just, if it doesn't equal, you just keep on borrowing more debt. And that number is getting pretty high. And the market is starting to say, wait a minute, we need higher rates if you're going to keep doing that. So something to watch for sure. And then, of course, as a reminder, the Federal Reserve, which is my next topic, has a very large balance sheet, and they are letting $95 billion per month roll off, meaning they own bonds as they mature. They do not reinvest them, and they get flooded in the market, and somebody's got to buy them. So the more supply you have, you know, the lower the price, the higher the yield. So something to look at, I'm sorry. And then, you know, 3-month T-bills, very high. This new graph I'm using, it's a tick higher than normal, but it's above 5.5%. So at this point, you know, make sure your cash is working for you. And you know that drill. I've been harping on that for a while now. And then the last regular topic, jumping to the Federal Reserve. Again, it's Friday the 3rd right now. The Federal Reserve had their last meeting on Wednesday, November 1st. As expected, no change in rates. And there was no economic projections released. And so a lot of the focus was on the press conference that Chairman Powell has after the end of each meeting. So he asked the usual questions, you know, people asking about, are they going to be done raising rates, et cetera, et cetera. In my opinion, you know, I listened to it very closely, and I have listened to all of them. You know, Chairman Powell has been very consistent and very firm that they are making sure, they want to make sure that the inflation rate gets back down to 2%. And until they're confident that conditions are in place to achieve that, they're going to definitely keep rates high and, if need be, continue to raise them. So his message was consistent and strong in that regard. And I viewed it as kind of a neutral to a slightly hawkish, you know, meeting and press conference, as had the last ones been. But the overall market did not agree with that. They definitely thought it was quite dovish. And so interest rates fell quite a bit, thinking that the Federal Reserve might be done now. And this was a pretty big reversal the first couple of days here of November on Treasury rates. Just pulling up the live market here. So the 10-year Treasury rate right now at 12:50 p.m. Central Time on Friday the 3rd is at 4.56%. So, you know, we were tickling 5% a week ago. And so a pretty big drop for bonds. And so that was going on. And so it's worth watching. And the next meeting is December 13th. I do include, again, there's this CME FedWatch tool using the Fed Funds futures. It shows you, based upon that pricing, what the market is expecting, or the probability of another rate hike by December or at the December 13th meeting. And so the chart I grabbed was the end of day Wednesday. So that implied probability is down to 20% now. It was as high as, call it, 45-50% back in end of August. And so it's still there. It's still a 20% noticeable possibility. But again, the market sentiment is likely not going to happen. I'm a bit surprised by that. You know, there's a couple of inflation readings to come out before that meeting. So TBD'd, but something to watch. And then again, this is Friday, so we did have the jobs report out this morning. Not as strong as people were expecting, but still 150,000 new jobs. And so the market was expecting a bit more. But, you know, the run rate is still pretty solid. And so we will see what the Fed does. But, you know, things aren't falling out of bed just yet. And inflation, yes, is coming down, but slowly. And we're still quite a ways away from that 2%. So those are the regular topics. A couple of special topics for this month. Thought I'd pull out two of them. So the first one that I mentioned is year-end tax planning. So again, each person's situation is unique. Like I say in my podcast each time. And definitely taxes is one of those situations. And so if you don't understand this stuff, you know, reach out for help. Some good value you can pick up with tax planning. The nice thing is you don't have to take on market risk to get that return. So it's a very nice thing to do. So definitely worth your while to either, you know, look at it yourself, or if you need help, you know, reach out for help, because there's things that can be done. Just a few examples. I list on the blog post, you know, making sure that you max out your 401k or 3B contributions. If you have kids in college, and if your state allows a deduction and you're saving for college, you know, hitting your 529 contributions before the end of the year. Those over age this year, it's the, those turning age 73 in 2023, or if you were taking RMDs before that, keep going, but make sure you take out your required distributions from IRAs and 401ks. They are different, and you got to take them out from each if you still have those and you're not working. If you're actively working, you don't need to take them out of the 401k. But so just check the rules and be careful. Doing any charitable contributions, different ways you can do it. One, you could do it the old-fashioned way and just, you know, pay directly with cash or donate some securities. You may or may not get the tax benefit for that, though, because if you don't itemize your deductions, because it's pretty high these days, you may not be getting that tax benefit. Another way to pick up some tax benefits and continue to do good, you can make contributions directly from your IRA. So it's called a charitable, qualified charitable distribution, QCD. So you got to get that done before end of the year. Or there's these donor-advised funds. It gets into tax planning strategies, but if you're going to do that, looking for large deductions, there's things you can do there. Roth conversions, again, depends upon a person's situation, what's the tax rate now versus in the future, other things with IRMA, et cetera, but need to get those done before the end of the year for this tax year. Now, it's true, some of you may be saying, well, Kirk, I can just do my IRAs and HSAs before I file my taxes next year. And driven activity, like 401ks, you got to get them in. And those other things I mentioned are, you know, 1231 activities that have to be done. So don't wait too long. Things get busy at the end of the year with custodians and advisors and yourselves. So act accordingly. And then the other special topic, I-bonds. So this was a hot topic a couple of years ago, or maybe a year and a half. I can't remember now how far back. But when inflation got really high, I-bonds, and so just stepping back, these are securities, issued by the Treasury. The only way you can get them is setting up an account at Treasury Direct, and they pay you a fixed interest rate plus whatever actual inflation is, and they reset that every 6 months. And so May 1st and November 1st, they let you know what the fixed rate component is for new money over the next 6 months, plus they look at the CPI and the specific calculations, what the inflation component is that applies to all cohorts in the bonds. So Wednesday was the big day. And it was, I was very intrigued by it to see what would happen, because if you look at my graphs on my blog post, in the Treasury rate section, I do show the TIPS real yields. So I said I was going to come back to this. So back in right after COVID, they were actually negative 1%, call it. When the Fed started raising rates, they actually got positive. They were kind of in that 1% hovering range. And then now, the latest reading on my blog here is at 2.46 real yield. So I was expecting the fixed rate component to be higher, and it was this time. Not as high as I was expecting, but still a very attractive 1.3%. And so that's very important, because those people who contributed into an I-bond for the first time back when they, you know, were at 9.62, the fixed rate component for your I-bond, that cohort, is zero. And now it's 1.3. So a person who put it in with a 0% fixed rate gets approximately 4% inflation component on an annualized basis, whereas new money that goes in after Wednesday here gets that same 4%, or slightly different, but let's just say it's the same 4%, plus this extra 1.3 fixed. And so the interesting thing, so one, be aware of it. If you haven't done your contributions for the year yet, great time to do it now. Congratulations for waiting until November 1st. And two, the most you can do is $10,000 a year. Once you put it in there, you can't touch it for 12 months, but a strategy. So just this is very brief, and be careful how you do it. Ask questions if you need help. But if you have an I-bond that you put in more than 12 months ago, so you're now past that 12-month lockout period, true, you are going to lose the last 3 months of interest if you withdraw an I-bond between years 1 and 5. However, You're not losing any fixed rate because it's zero. So you're losing the last 3 months of the inflation reset, which last period was, I think it was 1.6 or 1.67, somewhere in that zip code. So it may be worthwhile to close one down and then reinvest in a new one, pick up that higher fixed rate because you get that for the life of the I-bond. So something to look at. Yes, you do have to pay taxes on those gains when you take it out at the federal level. The nice thing about treasury securities, whether it's I-bonds, T-bills, whatever you buy in the open market, treasuries only, they are not subject to state tax. And so if you live in a state that has that, that's another advantage. So it's just something to look at. So that is the special topic summary. So in summary, wrapping up the podcast here, you know, returns for the month of October, negative across the board. The only exceptions were cash and commodities. Looking on a year-to-date basis, the larger U.S. large caps and international developed, those more established markets had positive year-to-date returns, but everything else, the major asset classes anyway, were showing negative returns. On the rate side, long-end rates kept marching higher again in October. Again, the first couple of days of November, they pulled back substantially, but that's been the big story, the big news in the rate market. Federal Reserve kept steady, as everybody expected, but the market kind of thought they were dovish, so the market is implying that maybe they're done. I say let's watch the December report. I'm sorry, December meeting, but also the inflation reports. We get two of them before that comes along. They do have the economic projections again in December, so it'll be interesting to see what they say there. And then finally, I just mentioned those special topics. So be aware of the tax planning before year end on those things that you have to, and look at your I-bonds and how much you've done, if you haven't done, and some different things you can do. Reach out for help if you have questions, because there's some interesting stuff there. So that is the summary of this month. I read in the news, I'm not a big Starbucks drinker, but I read in the news that this week they introduced the red cups this week. So I guess the season is upon us. So here we go. So, all right, well, that's a wrap on today's topic. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.